For decades, people have been working to get girls excited about STEM, but is it enough to counteract the other messages they're hearing?
You can walk into a Forever 21 and buy a t-shirt that says I'm allergic to algebra. Culture has been pushing girls out.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, women and girls in science, technology, engineering, and math. I'll talk with Reshma Sajani, founder of Girls Who Code, and we'll explore the history and progress this movement has made in Iowa. I'll talk to the directors of Women in Science and Engineering programs at Iowa State and the University of Iowa. I'll also talk with a mentor for the Student Role Model Program at ISU and the co-chair of the group Million Women Mentors. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The Women in Science and Engineering program at Iowa State University was founded 30 years ago in an effort to do something about the underrepresentation of women in science, technology, engineering, and math fields. This hour, we'll talk about the work that program and others in the state of Iowa have done over the decades, but we're going to start the hour with a relatively new effort to even the playing field in computer science. With me is Reshma Sajani. She's the founder of Girls Who Code, a national nonprofit organization. Her goal is to teach a million young women to code by 2020. She'll be speaking at Iowa State University in the Great Hall of the Memorial Union tonight at 8 p.m. Her presentation is called Women Who Don't Wait in Line. Hello, Reshma.
How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today. I want to start with some statistics that you cite on the website for Girls Who Code that are really startling about women in computer science. You cite in 1984, 37 of all computer science graduates were women, but today that number is just 18%. 20% of AP computer science test takers are female, and 0.4% of high school girls express interest in majoring in computer science. And then you ask the question, what's going on? So let me ask you that question. What do you think is going on?
You know, the first thing is culture. You know, if you look at what happened in the 80s, right when we're almost at parity with computer science graduates, but that was the time where the personal computer came out and we really marketed towards boys. So when you talk to or you spoke to Steve Jobs or Mark Zuckerberg, they'll say, my parents bought me a computer when I was 12 or 13. I took it apart and boom, I created Facebook, right? Having a personal computer was a huge kind of moment in their life, right, that opened them up to what was possible in terms of creation. I also think that in the 80s, we started kind of building this programmer myth, right? This guy in a hoodie who's in a basement typing on a computer somewhere who hasn't showered. From Weird Science to Revenge of the Nerds today to Silicon Valley, right? We created this myth, and girls look at that and say, you know, that's not for me. Like, I don't see myself in him. And so you can walk into a Forever 21 and buy a t-shirt that says I'm allergic to algebra. Culture has been pushing girls out of these fields. And girls are listening and are opting out.
Now, you don't have a background in computer science yourself. You're a lawyer. You're the former deputy public advocate of New York City. You've been involved in political campaigns. What made you want to do this? What was your moment that changed your trajectory?
It's very crazy that a girl who doesn't code started an organization called Girls Who Code. And I was definitely one of those girls that was terrified of math and science growing up. And I have no excuse. Both my parents are engineers. You know, they came here as refugees, and so they really pushed education. I really saw the gender divide in tech when I was running for office. I ran for Congress in 2010. I lost. But as I would go from classroom to classroom, I'd see hundreds of boys who wanted to be the next Steve Jobs or Mark Zuckerberg. And this question of where are the girls is what led me to start this organization. And you know, I feel passionately about this issue, and I've dedicated my life to it as an American, right? There's so many jobs that are open in these fields, 1.4 million. You know, you make twice the amount as a computer scientist or a data scientist than any other private sector job. And as women are the majority in college and in the labor force and almost the majority of breadwinners, the fact that women are not part of this growth, it's a huge issue.
Now, I want to return to the idea of those personal computers that Steve Jobs was playing with in his garage. When personal computers first came out, they were something that you could open up, you could take apart, you could build a machine that could do different things. There were tactile pieces. And now the technology that we hand our kids is slick and it's enclosed and you can see what it does, but you can't see the parts moving. Do you feel like the kind of technology that kids are interacting with is creating more of a divide?
That's interesting. Well, I mean, I think that there's like a movement to kind of like Little Bits, and I think what Debbie Sterling's doing at Goldilocks, right? There's a movement to kind of create these kind of toys that girls can kind of take apart and inspire them to want to build things and want to create things. I definitely feel so I support that, and I think often I did a voiceover for a Verizon commercial that was really about, you know, how we subtly, you know, like if something breaks in your house, right? More than likely, parents will tell me that they'll say, you know, Johnny, Stephen, come and help me fix it, right? We won't be calling Susan and Jennifer, right, to help us put something back together, right? This idea of, like, that boys are creators and girls are consumers is something that we even kind of, you know, unconsciously do while we're parenting. And I have an 11-month-old son, and I see people do that to him right now, right? So I think that we as parents, and as, you know, in our family unit, need to be more conscious of that. There's a lot of studies that just show that girls are actually much more proficient, right, at, you know, swiping the iPad than boys are. So I think it's about getting girls to say, you love your iPhone, you love your iPad. Like, aren't you curious about how you build it and how you create it? And that's what we're trying to do at Girls Who Code.
Now that your program has been in place for a couple of years and is expanding very quickly, how do you find you're connecting with girls? What gets them excited about learning to code?
Our growth has been crazy. You know, we went from 20 girls to 10, you know, last year we taught 10,000 girls, and we're now in 42 states. So we're everywhere. And, I, you know, our first group of 20 girls, like, you know, I knew their prom dates, right? I followed them. I stalked them on Facebook. I knew everything about them. And I tried to still do the same thing with my 10,000. So I, you know, every time I'm going, you know, go to a city that I'm visiting in one of our clubs in Iowa, I'm here in Chicago right now, I'm visiting a bunch of our clubs, and I'm constantly talking to our young girls about what they're interested in, you know, what prevented them from being in computer science, what they want to do with it now, what they're interested in building. Like, we really have a family, and we've built a sisterhood of girls. And even for me personally, like, you know, I have a young son, and I'm a CEO of a company. It's hard, right? And at times you feel like you're just doing everything wrong. And for me, it's like I just get my inspiration from them, you know, because they're awesome. And the things that they want to build, the problems that they want to solve, and they're constantly thinking about, like, their community, right? They're thinking about, my dad has cancer, so how can I build an algorithm to help find a cure? Or my mom's obese, can I build an app to help her think about healthy choices in eating? Or my brother's autistic, you know, what can I do to help him read better, right? It's like, and they, you know, a lot of our girls come from really tough circumstances. You know, half our girls are from free and reduced lunch, you know, single moms, you know, families of four, like taking a bus and a train to get to class, you know, leaving at 4 a.m. to get there, you know, to get a chance. And, you know, all these girls want, all these families want, is a chance to get up into the middle class, to get one of those high-paying jobs, right, so they can turn around their futures and get an opportunity to access the American dream. And what they will do and how they will fight, you know, for that type of opportunity is just, it's powerful for me to see.
Now, you're talking about a lot of girls who suffer from the digital divide. You know, if they come from a lower income household, they're less likely to have spent time with electronic devices, working on computers. Is that a challenge? I mentioned earlier that some of the technology that we have is kind of impenetrable. It almost seems magical to the users. Is that digital divide a problem for these girls when they try to get in and understand what's happening?
So it's funny because we'll have girls who literally will leave a homeless shelter, you know, and go to a class, in Manhattan and sit next to a girl who may go to the best private school in America. And after the 7 weeks in our summer immersion program, they're both in the same place to be equally competitive to go get a job at Facebook. And it's because they're both so far behind when it comes to our coding education in our country that they're actually starting at the same place. And that's both incredible and profoundly sad, right? So, yes, there's a digital divide. And, yes, there are a lot of our girls who don't have Wi-Fi at home, don't have Wi-Fi at school. But when it comes to what's being taught in the classrooms, again, whether you go to some of the best private schools in America or some of the most challenging schools, we're doing a horrible job.
The statistics that I cited a little while ago from 1984, again, 37% of all computer science graduates were women at that time. Today, the number is just 18%. We're going to be talking, and you are the keynote speaker at the event commemorating the 30th anniversary of Women in Science and Engineering at Iowa State University. We're going to be talking about the work that these programs have done over the last three decades. But, you know, Women in Science and Engineering was founded in 1986 because of this inequity. So if we've been reaching out and trying to talk to girls and trying to recruit girls into STEM fields for this long, why haven't we made more progress? What's the disconnect, do you think?
I mean, well, first of all, I think we need to separate kind of STEM, right? So we often conflate science, technology, engineering, and math together. And if you look at what's happening, I think, with science and math, we actually have made a lot. I think we've made a lot of progress. You know, girls are outperforming boys in math and science fields. You see more parity kind of in a lot of these fields in terms of kind of what's actually happening. I think the opportunity now is really in technology and engineering, the T and the E. And I think you're right. When it comes to engineering, we haven't made the same strides. And we haven't made the same strides that are happening, you know, across the world, in China, India, Japan, Nigeria, Cuba, right? It's Mexico, I think, produces the largest amount of, you know, female engineers. And so we really need to ask ourselves, I don't have the answer. I hope I have one of the answers. I'm really moved by kind of what I see as possible for our program. So, you know, 90% of our alumni after Girls Who Code are going on to major or minor in computer science. And 77% wanted to do something else.
You're working with high school girls. Do you have advice for parents of daughters?
Yeah. My advice for parents of daughters is to just, you know, I say teach them how to fail. You know, part of this issue, too, is that for so long we've been teaching our girls to be perfect. And a lot of what it means to be a scientist, what it means to be a mathematician, is trial and error. To start, to do it wrong, to do it right again, to do it wrong, and to keep trying. And so I think really kind of imposing a culture of failure amongst our girls is really, really, really important. I think the second thing is just get, you know, like you can get on Scratch, Khan Academy. You can do little projects with them. You can learn how to code with them. You know, I'm excited. We just did a deal with Penguin, and so we're going to have a series of books that are coming out from zero on up. So board books, coloring books, fiction books, you know, Babysitting Clubs meets Coders. We're putting our curriculum in a book because that's going to be out in 2017 for girls ages 10 to 13. So, like, we are flooding the market with tools for parents to teach their children, teach their girls how to code.
Reshma, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Reshma Sajani is the founder of Girls Who Code, a national nonprofit organization. She'll be speaking at Iowa State University tonight in the Great Hall of the Memorial Union at 8 p.m. Her presentation is Women Who Don't Wait in Line. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about women and girls in science, technology, engineering, and math. I was just talking with Reshma Sajani, founder of Girls Who Code. She'll be speaking tonight at Iowa State University as part of an event marking the 30th anniversary of the founding of Women in Science and Engineering at Iowa State. The program at the University of Iowa was founded 22 years ago, and we thought this was a good time to reflect on the work that these groups have done over the decades. With me now, Laura Lee Crystal is director of the Program for Women in Science and Engineering at Iowa State University. Hello, Laura Lee.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
And also with me, Jack Wiet Wade, Director of Women in Science and Engineering at the University of Iowa. Hello, Jack Wiet.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And Laura, I want to go back 30 years. I know you haven't been involved in the program for 30 years, but I know you know the history of the program. When Women in Science and Engineering at Iowa State University was founded, what was the impulse for creating this organization?
Well, it was really inspired by a group of faculty and staff led by Dr. Marianne Evans, who was the founding director of the program. And they really wanted a formalized program to increase the pathway for girls and women to enter science and engineering careers. And so they found some support through the provost's office, and they were actually able to provide enough funding to create something that was quite visionary. I mean, you have to remember this was long before STEM was cool or even an acronym. And so it was really these pioneers that, you know, got the momentum started at Iowa State.
All right. And 30 years ago, I was 11 years old, and I was one of the girls that this program was reaching out to. So I remember some of the outreach. But can you give people who maybe weren't on the receiving end an idea of what this organization started out doing?
Sure. So the first program that inaugural program was something called Taking the Road Less Traveled. And it's still in existence today. But the Taking the Road Less Traveled, or TRLT is our little short acronym for it, invites girls from all over the state of Iowa onto the Iowa State University campus to do hands-on activities with professionals from all sorts of different walks of life. So from industry as well as from campus, women would come in and do hands-on activity, talk about their careers, all the cool things that they could do in STEM. And so the first program was offered back in 1987, and today we've had over 61,000 girls, educators, and parents come to the Iowa State University campus and participate in the program.
How has the program evolved over the years?
The program started off as a one-time career conference on a Saturday. We, you know, in the mid-90s, I would say we swapped to a Thursday all-day format and increased the number of conferences into six a year. And so, you know, it's really sort of grown throughout the 90s. And then just a few years ago, we really sat down and took a look at the program. And just as Reshma was talking about earlier, we've really tried to refocus the conference. We've made a lot of progress in science as well as math, but the engineering and technology fields were still lagging behind. And so the conference, we're really trying to focus on encouraging girls to tinker and get involved with computer science as well as engineering as part of the conference focus.
And when you say you've made a lot of progress, can you put some statistics to that for me and help me understand what has changed?
Sure. So back in 1986, there was about 1,800 women that were majoring in STEM at Iowa State University. Today, that number has grown to over 5,600. You know, the percentages were around 20% back then. And so we've made a lot of progress. We're at 34%, but really it's those engineering and computer science numbers that are still quite low that are holding those percentages back. We're actually over 50% in most sciences, and in math, upwards of 40% here at Iowa State. Quite a bit of progress.
Absolutely. And Jacquiet, let me ask you, women in science and engineering at the University of Iowa, again, that was founded 22 years ago, so there are a couple decades under
sure.
the belt there. Can you tell me a little bit about the focus of your program?
I think as I listen to Laura Lee, who I'm excited that I'm going to have the opportunity to meet next week and learn with, that we really look to assist our students with mentoring, academic support, tutoring that we provide directly in the residence hall, and personal development.
All right. So focusing on college students at the University of Iowa, do you also work with younger people, or is this something that when women come to the university, that the outreach begins there?
Well, actually, the outreach begins before that. I have a colleague whose focus is K through 12 outreach. And then we have a couple of programs that we're involved with. The Society of Women Engineers are having a one-day conference for high school students in a couple of months. We also have the opportunity for some of our WISE ambassadors to go into the school systems. We get requests to come in and assist with activities to help teach and make the learning fun and valuable for young people.
And I know, Laura Lee, you have a program at Iowa State. It sounds like a similar program at the University of Iowa, but your student role model program at Iowa State, and we're going to talk to one of your student role models here in just a moment, but can you describe that program for us?
Yeah, so another program on that K-12 side, so, you know, in terms of, you know, trying to introduce girls and boys to STEM careers is our student role model program, where we hire our undergraduate students in science and engineering majors to go into classrooms all over the state of Iowa to do hands-on activities in the classroom. And it's really important for those boys and girls to see what a scientist or engineer can look like.
And now I want to bring your student role model into the conversation. Jackie Messenbrink is here. She is a mentor for the student role model program at Iowa State University. She's also a junior studying biology. Hello, Jackie.
Hi.
Thank you for being here today. Now, first of all, when you were growing up, were you involved in any of these programs that were reaching out to get girls interested in STEM careers?
Actually, I wasn't as much, but then my senior year, I came to visit Iowa State, and I visited the WISE program, and they talked about taking the road less traveled, which it's more towards, like, middle school students, but I was like, I'm going to go. I'm going to learn. I need to know, like, what this is about. So I actually went to taking the road less traveled my senior year, and then I was sold. I was like, I have to be in engineering. I have to be in science. Like, I have to be in this program. So I immediately started right when I got to college. I started as an ambassador. I now work in the office, a couple jobs in the office. And then I have the best job, and I'm a student role model, and I get to inspire kids every day.
Before you encountered WISE, Women in Science and Engineering, had you thought about majoring in a scientific field when you were in college?
Kind of. My dad has been a huge inspiration to me. He kind of pushed me in that direction, like, you're really good at math, you're really good at science. But I was kind of like, so what do I do? It wasn't like I knew. There wasn't a lot of opportunities, I think, in my school to show me that. So I was like, oh, I'm pretty good at this. Like, maybe I'll do it. It wasn't a direct, like, oh, I know I must be an engineer. So that's kind of how I started.
And what was it that made you think biology is the field that I want to focus on?
I've been all over. But I started as an engineer, and I liked that a lot. I just didn't. I love science so much more than I loved math. For some reason, it just math clicked, but it wasn't that much fun for me. And then I switched to chemistry, and now I'm biology with a chemistry minor. And I just love it. Like, I love research. I really want to teach. And that's why I love the student role model program, because I get to go in, and as a biology student, I get to show these kids, like, what it's like. And it gives me great ideas for how I want to be, like, a great teacher and inspire all these students to, like, jump into STEM, and that it's okay, and give those opportunities to all those girls who might not know what it is.
Can you describe one of the lessons that you do when you go to the schools? What happens?
Okay, so my favorite one is Protect the Pringle. The students just get so excited, and they have no idea what's going on. You get 10 pieces of paper, one Pringle, and like 2 meters of tape. So we give them all this material. We don't tell them what we're going to do to their Pringle, and they kind of have to package it. So they're like packaging engineers, and they have to work as a team and figure out how to make the best package. And what I actually do is we drop it. We like put a weight of pennies on it, which usually kills their Pringle. And then we also submerge it in water. And they always are like, it's going to float. It's going to float. And then I sink it in, and they're just like, oh, no. It's just always so fun to watch them. So it's a lot of group collaboration with just the groups. But I've definitely noticed when I go into classrooms, if it's like a group of four, if it's 2 girls and 2 boys, they make the best design. If it's all girls or all boys, those are usually the ones that aren't as good, which is very interesting to me. And something that I've really noticed going into teaching is to make sure it's equality of like the women and the men, because they seem to build like the best package for their Pringle.
Oh, that's very interesting. And Jackie, I asked Laura Lee earlier to give me some statistics about the kind of progress that has been made with women in science and engineering at Iowa State University. Can you give me an idea about how things have changed at the University of Iowa over time?
Well, I think we probably have half the numbers that they have at Iowa State, maybe near 3,000 students who are part of the Women in Science and Engineering program. I think the more that we are intentional around mentoring, we also have a mentoring component to the WISE program, the hands-on, the networking, getting our students involved with industry. We had Rebecca Turner from Emerson, one of our corporate sponsors, and a wonderful group of women who came this past Sunday to have dinner with our students and answer questions and talk about interviewing skills and tips and learning where they had their own insecurities at and how the job was able to help them to overcome some of those insecurities.
When looking at students who are majoring in engineering or scientific fields at the University of Iowa, do you know what the breakdown is by gender?
Today, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. But I will surely find out.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
Well, and Laura Lee, it was interesting to me when we first started talking. I mean, you talked about why you invited Reshma Sanjani of Girls Who Code, because girls and women are so far behind or so underrepresented in the field of computer science. As your numbers reach parity in other scientific fields at Iowa State University, does that change the goal? Does that change your mission with women in science and engineering?
I don't think it necessarily changes our mission. I think at the K-12, so our pre-college programs, we're really trying to refocus those to increase the numbers, without losing that parity we've gained in the sciences and math. At the undergraduate level, we do a tremendous amount of programming. And so, obviously there's a lot of differences depending on the majors, but we do a lot of mentoring type programs trying to get women through those really difficult first four semesters. That's really sort of that key point. Students are still trying to figure it out. And so through some of these programs that we offer at Iowa State, similar to the University of Iowa, we do residential programs, mentoring. We really try to focus on the leadership and the self-efficacy piece for students, reinforcing the fact that they can do it. In that freshman year, it's really when that, belief and, their confidence bottoms out. And so really trying to build that up through academic support. But really the key is that leadership development. Students who are engaging in ways beyond their classrooms really seem to fare better. And so that's one of the reasons we love Reshma's work is that, she really talks about this idea of taking a risk, that you have to embrace failure. She promotes mentorship in her work and that authenticity and leadership. And so our students really connect with that. And that's a message that goes across all science and engineering majors. It doesn't matter who you are. You're going to deal with these kinds of issues throughout your career. For engineering and our computer science students, it happens right away. For a lot of our biology students like Jackie, it doesn't happen until maybe they leave the comfort of Iowa State and go into the workforce. But, there's roadblocks along the way. And so what we're trying to do is give them the tools to be able to work around those roadblocks and persevere and have, rewarding careers.
Now, thinking back to, again, the early days of women in science and engineering at Iowa State University, as I mentioned, I was one of the people targeted by the program. And one of the ways that I was reached was through the Talented and Gifted program at my school. And the girls who were involved in women in science and engineering were all in the TAG program at my school. And listening to Reshma a little while ago talking about the diversity of girls that she's trying to reach out to with Girls Who Code, I'm curious, with women in science and engineering, is there an effort to reach beyond the girls who are already doing well in school?
Certainly. I mean, that's one of the things we really try to do is dispel the myth that you have to be, a smart girl to be in science and engineering. Reshma shared, and this is true, I think across the nation, certainly in Iowa, that our girls are performing at the same levels in their math and science courses through high school. They are just as prepared as men when they graduate from high school. What they're missing is that career connection. And if we keep targeting, that you have to be in a special program, a smart girl, in order to succeed in these careers, we're losing too many of our girls through those stereotypes. And so we really need to change that conversation, change the messaging for all of these K-12 programs that we're doing, not saying, are you good at math and science, but do you want to solve problems? Do you want to change the world around you? Well, then you should come and take advantage of a Girls Who Code camp or come and attend a Taking the Road Word Less Travel. So we spend a lot of time working on the messaging with our K-12 teachers when they come on campus for Taking the Road Less Travel Career Conference, for example, going to conferences and sharing that we really need to work on the messaging before, for all of these programs that are going on.
Well, and Jackie, as you go out to the schools or Girl Scout groups or other groups that you talk to, is there a way that you try to bring that message and make sure you're targeting everyone?
I always try when I'm talking to the students, I never say like, oh, you're just really smart. Like, it's never about them being really smart. It's about what they can do. It's more about them working through the problem. And it's not about, I've had girls come up to me and I'm not good enough to do this. You are good enough. And that's what I try to inspire in them. Like, you are good enough to do this. And it's not about being good. It's about what you can do. And I think like being, especially now, even me with failure, like letting them know it's okay if your Pringle broke during the experiment. It doesn't mean that you can't do it. Build a better design. It doesn't mean that you're not smart enough to do it. It just means you might have failed once, but try it again and you'll do 100 times better.
Jackie, thank you so much for talking with us
today.
Yeah. Jackie Messenbrink is a mentor for the Student Role Model Program at Iowa State University and a junior studying biology. Staying with me, Laura Lee Crystal, Director of the Program for Women in Science and Engineering at Iowa State University, and Jacquiet Wade, Director of Women in Science and Engineering at the University of Iowa. We'd also love to hear from you. Are you a woman who works in a STEM field? How did you get involved? What gave you the confidence to pursue this field? What has your experience been? 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about women and girls in science and engineering. And we would love to hear from you. Are you a woman in a STEM field? How did you get involved? What got you excited? What gave you the confidence to pursue the path that you've taken? How do you feel about the programs that are offered for kids today to encourage them to get involved in STEM? Have we reached a point where maybe just focusing on girls isn't the right move? What are your thoughts? 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Jacquiet Wade. She's Director of Women in Science and Engineering at the University of Iowa. And Laura Lee Crystal, Director of the Program for Women in Science and Engineering at Iowa State University. And we have an email that we received, thoughts from the conversation that I had earlier with Reshma Sanjani, founder of Girls Who Code. She says, this is from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. Just an observation, the classic and incorrect assumption is that girls do better with languages. So it confuses me that girls are still somehow assumed to be unwilling or unable to enjoy or understand coding, because coding is just a linguistic arrangement of commands. Most industry growth of late has been taking the form of coding and programming. So if anything, women should be dominating the field rather than lagging behind. I think that women and girls have just been intellectually marginalized, regardless of the supposed justification for it. And Jacquiet, I'd love to get your response. There has been so much focus on making sure that girls are successful in the classroom over the years. There are some people who feel that maybe it's gone too far and we need to be looking at making sure that students are successful in the classroom, not just one gender. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, hearing the email and the use of the word marginalize. When we marginalize anyone, we tell them you're not good enough. You're not capable, right? And the other piece of that is, how do we make them feel important? There is brilliance in all of us. And so for me then, it's only right that our job is to figure out, how do you bring out the brilliance of the young people that we work with? And no, we don't just start to reach them in high school. We have to reach them K through 12, really young, to help them understand that they have the ability. And how do we foster that? How do we encourage? How do we, as Laura Lee spoke about earlier, change the messages? I don't think there's any debate in terms of the lagging for men who dominate these fields, right? To me, you can't debate that. The focus on women in STEM, it had to happen. Go back to Jackie, the student's word, equality. All of these words go together. The leadership, helping all of our students become leaders, whether it's young boys or young girls, that's our responsibility, is to reach all of these students. And if we need to do a little bit extra to reach our girls, so be it, because I'm almost certain we're not going to leave the boys behind, right? Because we want to be equitable in the educational system, even though as a whole, it's not. They're the haves and the have-nots. The lieutenant governor even mentions that a little bit in the report that they put together, I believe, after 2013 or 2014. You know, so while there's progress, we still have to be realistic about what the situations are.
And I'd love to hear, Laura Lee, do you have anything you want to add to that conversation? Because there are people who say, okay, after 30 years, maybe programs like this have done their job and we need to just be focusing on getting kids excited about STEM.
I think one of the differences for our young girls and boys is that is the role modeling piece as well. Is, you know, young girls don't see their mothers, their aunts, people to look up to that are in computer science or engineering fields. And so I think that's one of the, you know, it's an assumption that we make. But, you know, young boys, they have those role models all around them. And for girls, we tend to talk in stereotypes, you know, things like the Big Bang Theory, you know, kind of gives an image of what a female scientist might look like. And a lot of our young girls don't, it doesn't resonate with them. You know, they want to be able to be, you know, helping people in lots of different ways. And so they don't really see that connection of how a computer science degree is going to help me help others around. And so I think that's where we're, you know, there's a bit of a disconnect, is that lack of role models in the workforce for our young girls.
I want to go to the phones, and you're welcome to join our conversation, 866-780-9100. Emily is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Emily.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Yeah, I have a daughter who's in seventh grade in Dubuque. She is off the charts on math and science. I just want to know how you guys talked about failure and allowing them to fail. She won't do anything if she knows she's going to fail. She just stops doing it. So how do you help her understand that failure is a part of this? And how do you get her into the right programs that help her fail the right way so that she can see that that's a part of learning?
Emily, I think that's a great question, something a lot of parents of boys and girls struggle with. Laura Lee, do you have some thoughts on that?
Sure. I'm actually dealing with this in my own personal life. I have a ninth grade daughter who has some very similar characteristics. And, you know, she does. She avoids failure at all cost. I think one of the most humbling experiences she's had is trying to get her driver's license, her permit. She's failed the exam three times. She would hate me for telling that story. But and so I've been talking to her about resiliency. And I think one of the ways that we can sort of combat this in our kids is pointing it out, you know, talking about, you know, when they do fail, what does that mean? And that you can't learn. And one of the pieces of Reshma's book that I absolutely love is there's a quote in there that says the world's most successful women have not achieved what they have achieved by avoiding failure, that is the only way we learn. If we're going to be perfect at it the first time, we're never going to learn anything from it. And, you know, in order to be successful in your future, you have to learn how to fail. And that grit is what's going to get you through whatever career path you choose. And so if we avoid it now and we don't learn that lesson at seventh grade, then it's just going to come out at another point. And this is where, you know, our college programs, and I'm sure the University of Iowa, they see this all the time. You know, our young women come into, you know, that first calculus class their freshman year, and they're used to getting, an A in everything. You know, they had a 4.0 GPA in high school, and they get that first C+ on a calculus exam. Jackie's sitting in the studio smiling at me, but they get that first, you know, C+, and to them, that is an F, you know, that they have failed, and so they need to look for something that they can be, quote-unquote, successful. And so we spent a lot of time talking to students about those those failures and how to come back. And I think the best way is for them to interact with, you know, college women, professional women about those failures and what doors that, you know, may have closed, but what doors opened because of that failure. And so wherever we can get them to practice it, you know, in middle school and high school, I think that, you know, they're much better off when they get to the college level. And certainly when they become professionals in the workforce, it does pay off.
Emily, thank you so much for your call. And a lot of conversation has been around the idea of making sure that our girls see women who are operating in a STEM field and have had a career, and an organization that is focused on doing that is Million Women Mentors. Jana Reeker is the Iowa co-chair of Million Women Mentors, which, of course, is a nationwide program that's designed to find a million STEM mentors, both men and women, to increase the interest and confidence of girls and women in STEM fields and careers. And she is with us on the line. Hi, Jana.
Hello there.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thanks for having me. I've really appreciated the conversation and was anxiously awaiting the introduction because, Laura Lee, your conversation with about the caller's daughter and your daughter, it is so normal for a young lady to hear, have their parents say, you can do this. Go ahead. It's okay to fail. But one of the things that we've found with Million Women Mentors is that having someone outside the family mentoring that girl, encouraging that same thing, saying failure is success, finding ways to improve through taking risks or taking challenges and just getting out there, it has proven to be such a successful model, and we're excited to be a part of it. So thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely. And tell me a little bit about what you've been able to accomplish with Million Women Mentors in Iowa so far.
Right. Well, Million Women Mentors Iowa was launched just over a year ago with Lieutenant Governor being the first state to pledge to have 5,000 mentors in throughout Iowa by the year 2018. What we have built is an infrastructure to be able to highlight the programs, all the great programs that are already available everywhere from pre-K to PhD is the range that we really focus, because it's a continual process. We built an executive council to be able to reach out to businesses, including my co-chair, Mike Lawson, who is the is with Association of Business and Industry, to make sure that every county in the state is a part of this, and that mentoring across the state, whether you're a second grader in an elementary school who really knows they have a passion for math and they're trying to get into a Lego programming or even on the math bowl, all the way through once you're in college, how do you find your niche and be able to see yourself successful? One of the statistics that's always really hit me, even of the 100 female bachelor students that graduate with a STEM degree, only 3 of them continue in a STEM field 10 years after graduation. We even if we get them in the field, somewhere along the way, we lose them. They either lose interest, or they find that they're the only woman in an engineering department. And they need that camaraderie. I believe Jacquette said earlier, one of the things that we want to make sure that we're doing is building that so they see the impact they're making on people's lives. And I think mentoring and those conversations are the way to be able to do that.
Well, and as I mentioned earlier, you're recruiting women and men to be mentors. Why do you think that is an approach that is going to work? We've heard a lot about, you know, women, girls aren't seeing their mothers, they're not seeing their aunts, they're not seeing the women in their lives in these fields. Does it work to have a male mentor in the field as well?
Yeah, we're finding that having either a woman or a male in the mentoring role, encouraging that young woman to take risks, and because STEM engineering, STEM programming, if we don't have the population base already out there, we're asking anyone in a STEM-related career, and they don't even have to be experts in STEM, just mentoring someone to go ahead and take those risks, to follow their dreams, to pursue an education in STEM, that you don't have to be an expert in one of the fields to be able to do it. We're looking for people who are interested in helping a young woman pursue those career opportunities.
And I know your goal is to have mentors in all 99 counties by 2018. Is this a particular challenge in some of the rural counties in Iowa?
Actually, we're finding there's great programming in every county. What we find is that while the programming is available, making those connections sometimes isn't. So if you go to the millionwomenmentors.org website, you can register and then find local mentoring opportunities. So maybe we have somebody that's interested in doing it in their county, and yet they need to say, well, okay, well, do I go to the local schools? How do I find mentoring opportunities? We also have programming and mentoring opportunities available on the site.
Well, Jana, thank you so much for sharing your work with us today.
Thank you.
Jana Reeker is co-chair of Million Women Mentors in Iowa. And we have an email that I'd like to put to you, Laura Lee, and I'm sure it's something you've heard before. This is from Eric. He says, according to the National Science Foundation, over 50% of all STEM bachelor's degrees go to women, 50.5% in 2012. While it's appropriate and interesting to focus on fields where women are underrepresented, we need to also focus on the fields where men are underrepresented. What programs do Iowa State and the University of Iowa have to encourage men to enter and succeed in STEM fields? Laura Lee?
Certainly. So at Iowa State, there's not any specific, you know, there are some majors where men continue to be underrepresented. And we have, some learning community programs that have support for all students. I guess what we try to share with individuals when we get this question is that there's a systematic inequity that's been created throughout the educational pathway. And so at the college level, especially at Iowa State University, where we focus on the science and technology fields. In our own case, we don't necessarily have, those issues at the same level. And so we do need these kinds of programs to build equity for our women. There are some programs where that's not necessarily the case. But at Iowa State, because of where our focus is on those engineering and science fields, it's not something that we typically address through our programs. The system has been built for men, and so it's something that we find that is asked oftentimes, but men are succeeding at equal rates, or if not that, better.
Before we run out of time, I want to ask you, I mentioned that this is the 30th anniversary of the founding of Women in Science and Engineering at Iowa State University. The keynote address tonight from Reshma Sajani is part of this celebration that you're having. And we've talked a lot about the progress that has been made over 30 years. But as you're marking this milestone, what do you want people to know about the work that you've done over the last three decades?
Oh, great question. I think that what we really want to focus now, and I think the conversation related to men and women is, I think in the last 30 years, we've really focused on sort of fixing the women. What can we do to pull women up? And I think that the conversation is changing now, where we need to engage both men and women in talking about how to be more diverse and inclusive in all spaces. So, getting back to the last question, I think this is a way where we can build up all students. And so I think that's where we'll be going in the next decade or so in order to get to 50-50.
Laura Lee, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Laura Lee Crystal, Director of the Program for Women in Science and Engineering at Iowa State University. Jack Wiette, thank you so much.
Thanks, Charity, for having me as well.
Jack Wiette Wade is Director of Women in Science and Engineering at the University of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Lindsay Moon, Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.